Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
One Strange Night, Volume 1, Story 1. In 1985, I was 17 and dating a girl in Valparaiso, Indiana. Her dad and I became close, and we were both Bears fans at the best time you could be one. I was there late one night in December after a game, and my girlfriend, mother, and sisters went to bed. It was about 2 a.m., and we heard this banging outside. He said, "Want to see something?" We got bundled up and treaded outside in the knee-high snow. They lived outside town in a rural setting, the field across the road and just a few houses on their side. We went around the house, and I could see light in their neighbor's shed. Shadows were flashing through the light, and you could tell the bulb was swinging. The shed had windows in each door and open barn style. As we got closer, I could see tools flying around the room and banging against the walls. I looked at him, "Hey, what the hell is that?" He said, "I've seen this twice. Watch." When we got up to the doors, he reached up to grab the handle and looked at me just before he grasped it. He said, "Wait," then grabbed the handle. It was like a plug was pulled. Light went out and everything stopped. All you could hear was the wind. He said, "Show's over." We walked back silently. I went into the service a few months later and never saw him again. We never talked about it, not once. 20 years later, I ran into my ex-girlfriend and told her that story. She said he never told her that. She called him while I was sitting there, and he said, "Oh yeah, that was something all right." She just shrugged her shoulders and said, "Ain't that just like him?" Next story. One day when I was a teenager, my neighbor approached me and asked me if I would like to earn some money by helping him clean up his basement. Now, I remind you, I knew something about this house from first-hand experience, that it was haunted. But the lure of money was just too great, and nothing ever happened there during the day. So I agreed. We began by removing a lot of junk that he had accumulated over the years, and then he wanted to start removing the dirt from under the house so that the crawl space would be bigger. Well, as I was the smallest, I was elected to do the job. I worked for the better part of an hour digging away from under the house, and just before I was to take a break, I uncovered something. A hand. It appeared to be the petrified hand of a baby holding a rattle. Now, believe me, at first I didn't know what to make of it. But being a little skeptical and not really being able to see all that well, I thought that maybe it was a doll's hand. I put it in my pocket and finished clearing out the area I was working on. When I came out of the hole, a friend of mine was there and I told him about my find. Needless to say, he didn't believe me. So I took it out of my pocket and tossed it to him. He took one look at it and said, "That ain't funny, man," and tossed it back to me like it was on fire. I looked at it a little closer, and it really did appear to be the severed hand of an infant, cut off just above the wrist. So I decided to toss it back to him and get him to take a closer look and see if he came up with the same conclusion. Well, he decided he did not want to touch it again, and he let it drop to the ground in front of him. We both saw where it had landed, and not wanting to lose this find, I went to pick it up. I got to where it should have been, and it was gone. We searched the entire area around where it had landed, and even some areas where it couldn't have possibly gone, but it was nowhere to be found. To this day, my friend doesn't like to be reminded of that incident, and he makes a wide path around that house. Now, some of you may say this story is made up, or that it really was a doll's hand, but you were not there. And my friend and I both know what we saw and what happened afterwards. Plus, we knew the history of the house. Next story. I'd like to share a few stories of things that have happened to me. I don't know if we just moved into the wrong house, or if some people are just more receptive to unearthly phenomena. My mom and I lived in this cute little house. Nothing happened at first, until a couple of months later. We're sitting in the kitchen having tea with my aunt and my cousin, when all of a sudden we hear this lady crying in the basement. We all looked at each other, and we knew nobody was downstairs because we were all upstairs. We knew it wasn't a radio or TV because there wasn't any downstairs. My mom suggested we peek down the stairs, but as we came closer, the crying got louder, so we decided to just listen upstairs. It continued for a few minutes, then just stopped. I only heard this one time. I don't know if my mom heard it again. I was sitting in a chair watching TV in the same house when I felt like someone was watching me. You know that feeling of chills down your back? That's what happened. I turned to look behind me, and I could see this red kind of see-through hand coming at me like it was going to grab me. It was kind of late in the night, and I was up by myself. I immediately jumped off, turned off the TV, and hopped into bed with my mom. Here's another story that happened in another house, and this was about 3 years later. This was an old two-story house that belonged to this old couple that both died. I don't know if they died in this house. Me and my friend were painting a piece of furniture downstairs. Just her and I were there when all of a sudden the washer door just slammed down twice. We both looked at each other and walked up the stairs slowly. She then told me that she was just sitting on the washer a few minutes ago and that the washer door was closed. There's only one bedroom on the main floor in this house, and it happened to be my room. Sometimes we could see little orbs of light in there. That bedroom was right beside the living room, and one night, while I was watching TV by myself, I could hear someone breathing hard, sort of snoring. I turned on the TV and listened. Sure enough, it sounded like someone was sleeping in the room when there was nobody in there. We used to hear someone walking around upstairs, too. I'm not the only one that heard these things. My husband and children used to hear these things, too. Even my teenage daughter never wanted to be alone in that house. To this day, they still mention the old haunted house. The house is now empty, but the guy who lives beside it says he hears things like slamming doors coming from the house occasionally. I don't believe that these spirits were out to harm anybody. Maybe it was the old couple just living there with us. Just before we lived in the old house, we lived in a trailer where we experienced a few freaky things. A few people, including me, used to see shadows in the shape of a person walking around in the trailer. This one night, everybody was in bed, except me and my husband. We decided to go to bed, so we turned off all the lights and went to bed. About 10 minutes go by, and we're just falling asleep, and the lamp in the living room turns on. We knew it wasn't any of us because the kids were sleeping, and we were both in bed. Maybe it was the land we were living on, because my husband's brother used to have a trailer about 2 meters from where our trailer was. The freaky thing is both of our trailers burnt down. His burnt down quite a few years before our trailer burned. We told his brother what we experienced, and he said that they used to see and hear things too. Next story. I was about 31 years old and about 5 months pregnant, not drinking or drugging, in May of 1985, visiting my mom and dad in New Mexico. They lived in a brand new two-story Spanish-style home at the north end of Albuquerque. Everyone had retired to sleep, and I was dozing off and on in the guest room on a daybed facing away from a large arched window that faced the streetlight. So it was not a really darkened room. After a few attempts to close my eyes, a robed figure stood facing away from me, maybe 4 feet in front of me. I really truly thought it was my mom. Maybe she had been drinking and was sleepwalking. I said, "Mom?" And it stayed where it was, so I sat up on my elbow and repeated louder and with more force, "Mom!" Well, I got its attention, and it began to turn slowly towards me, and then I realized it was not my mom, and every hair on my body stood up, and it just vanished right before my eyes. I was so shocked. I just knew it had to be my mom, so I jumped up, threw on every light in the room, as well as the TV, ran to my parents' room, and they were both very asleep. I even tried to wake them up. My dad was snoring, and my mom had spit drooling. So I shook my head, went back to the room, and ran to look out the window. Nothing. I searched the whole house, turned on every light, still nothing. Next story. There's a house in my hometown where I used to live, and where one of my best friends used to live. We have both seen most of the same stuff at the same time, but some things we have seen at different times. When I lived there, I saw some things, and when he lived there, he saw some things. The first thing I saw happened one morning while I was getting ready for school. I was headed downstairs with my sheet because it was always cold there. I felt like something was behind me, so I turned to look around. It was a dog. Only I could see through it, and it had no head. The second thing that happened to me was I went down to the basement one night, because this is where we had our pool table at the time. I turned on the light for the basement, and as I was walking down, I felt something grab my leg from behind the stairs. I freaked and ran down the stairs, and the light went out. I made it out the side door. After that, we put the pool table upstairs. Oh yeah, and in my parents' room, there was a little box-like thing made out of wood. It looked like a storage box of some sorts, but I could never get it to open. Now, on to what my friend saw. When my family moved out, my best friend moved in like 5 or 6 years later. I'd totally forgotten about the things that had happened to me in that house until he started telling me things that had happened to him. He said on certain nights, he could hear and see a red ball bouncing down the stairs and back up the stairs. He also saw a little girl. He said the girl would appear in his room and she would be crying. He guessed because her doll's head had fallen off. But then, he said a man would come wielding an axe and grab the girl and pull her out of the room. Then he threw her down the stairs. He said one night he got up enough courage to follow them, and they made their way to the basement. There, the ghost disappeared. He said he saw the basement change before his eyes. The floor had become covered with bones, and he saw light shining in the corner. The basement had a little tunnel in it that wrapped around half of the house. He crawled down the tunnel, and there was an axe up against the wall. He went to grab it, and it was gone. The next thing that happened to us was when I spent the night there. It was the summer, so I was basically always over there. We were watching tapes, ECW, which for those who don't know what that is, it was a wrestling show. Suddenly, it got real dark outside, like freaky dark for 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it started lightning. My buddy said this is what happened the last time before the ghost appeared. He said that lightning had flashed 13 times, and then they appeared. I laughed thinking, yeah, right. Boom, the second flash of lightning. I looked out the window and saw a trailer across the street, and it looked like someone was staring back at me. But that couldn't be because the trailers were abandoned. Then I woke up with a wet towel on my head and toilet paper on my nose. My buddy had said that I started shaking and my nose started bleeding and I passed out. I sat up and asked how many strikes of lightning we were up to. He said 10 and asked what I saw. I tried to explain to him that it was like a man figure, but he had red glowing eyes. Bam! Another strike of lightning followed by another. There was one left, and we would see if my friend's story would hold true. Then the last strike hit. To my surprise, there was no thunder. Then the TV went off, and a cold chill filled the room. I looked around as my eyes were trying to adjust, and I saw a figure of a little girl. I quickly closed my eyes and covered my head. Then I felt something tug the covers. I said, "Stop it, Rick. I believe you." He didn't say anything. I pulled them down, and the girl was right in front of my face. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. We did some research through locals. They said the house was haunted, and we were like, no shit. But one lady who used to live there added that one night, she had locked up and went upstairs to lay down for bed. She had gotten almost to sleep when she heard the front door unlock and open the shut and lock back. Now, in this house, the door has only one door that can be locked from the outside unless the new people that live there have recently changed it. But before they moved in, the only door that could be locked from the outside is a door on the side of the house. She rushed downstairs to find nobody in the house, so she went back to bed. Then she heard her dishes being messed with once again. She rushed downstairs to see dishes on the floor and her knives and forks floating in the air. They stopped and went flying towards her. She got behind a door. She left that night and moved out the next day. Something really bad and crazy happened in that house. But every time I try and research it, nothing pops up on the web or in any of our local papers from the past. I'm thinking somebody covered it up just to sell the house. Next story. From August 2005 to late spring 2006, I lived in a spacious old flat in Madison with three friends. One day, I was home alone putting dishes away in the kitchen when I heard the loud sigh of a woman behind me. I hadn't heard anyone come in, but I wasn't startled because it sounded exactly like my housemate's girlfriend, Joelle, whom I've known for years, and it was common for her to be there during the day. But when I turned around, she wasn't there. I checked the rest of the house, but I was alone and the front door was locked. On another weekend, I was out of town with my fiancé visiting her family. All the rest of my housemates spent the weekend out of town as well. In fact, one of them was out of state, except Tom, who stayed there with his girlfriend. the same previously mentioned Joel. When I returned late Sunday night, Tom asked me where I had been all day, and I explained that I had been out of town since Friday afternoon. Tom seemed a little alarmed by that, saying, "We both saw you walk from your room to the kitchen and back at night yesterday while we were watching TV. It was dark, but we were sure it was you." We were both a bit creeped out by the thought. When I was alone in the computer room or my bedroom, I would frequently hear heavy footsteps creaking on the wood floor in the dining room. Eric John, one of the housemates, wore heavy, hard-soled boots indoors all the time, so I usually assumed it was just him until I went to welcome him home and discovered the flat was empty and I was alone. All three of the other housemates agreed that they had experienced the same phenomena, and often. Most of the things that happened there mimicked the actions of the flat's occupants. I wonder if the house just remembered the things that happened in it and replayed them. Next story. I have a couple of short stories. These are about my grandparents, especially my grandfather, who tends to see spirits a lot. Him and my Nana, Nana is Italian for grandmother, live in a house that was built in the 60s. They are the only people to ever have lived in that house. It was built shortly before they moved in. Apparently there is a guy in a cowboy hat who stands in the back of the hallway. He doesn't do or say anything, he just stands there. My grandpa, my uncle, and a few of my uncle's friends have all seen him. My Nana, my dad, or I have never seen him, though when I was younger, I was always afraid to walk down that hallway. I'm not sure why, but for some reason it scared me. My grandparents still live there, although I haven't been there to the house in years. Maybe the next time I go, I'll look for the man with a cowboy hat on. Here's another story about a spirit my grandpa saw. When he was around 15 or 16 years old, he saw his next-door neighbor walking down the street. He wanted to get her attention, so he kept calling her name, Phyllis. Phyllis! Phyllis! Turn around, Phyllis! He continued doing that for a while and then started walking up to her to try and get her attention. He couldn't get her to turn around, so he gave up and left. He went to Phyllis's house when her mom answered, heartbroken. My grandpa said, "I just saw Phyllis walking down the street. But no matter what I did, she wouldn't turn around," her mom answered. "Phyllis died about 2 hours ago." My grandpa thinks he saw her spirit crossing over. It was definitely her because he knew her for years and saw her face before he started yelling at her to turn around. Next story. On January of 2003, my husband and I were returning from a couple of days of play. It was late and dark, and we were talking nonstop as we always did, even when there was nothing to say as we drove towards home. The subject of crossing over and death came up. I had lost 5 relatives in the preceding 13 months, and we talked about where they might be, what they might be, how they might be. Death conversations were never macabre with us. They always seemed natural and open and inquisitive. This night's exchange of ideas seemed a little more serious, but not scary serious, just interesting serious. Ron and I had been married 40 years, less about 3 weeks, and at some point in the discussion we made a pact. The one of us who found ourselves first on the other side would attempt to contact the one left behind, a small concrete sign that life does indeed go on. That brief exchange of ideas and promises between two healthy adults with plans to live many, many more years resurfaced within a fortnight and with surprising clarity. Here's my story. We traveled a lot, and wherever we went, we collected spoons. Over the last several years, we took 30 to 90 day trips, and for our last year together, we rolled along in an Alpha Gold fifth wheel. We worked as camp hosts, birded, hiked, built trails, went sightseeing, hit the casinos, and collected spoons. Ronnie died 9 days before we were to leave on a 30-day trip to Australia and New Zealand to celebrate our 40th anniversary. Anticipating the spoons we would collect had made the planning a bit more intriguing. Our collection of spoons began in 1974 in Denver, Colorado, the first of many vacations we would share with Betts, my mother-in-law. She bought a spoon rack for me to display spoons commemorating the sights we saw. Spoons from every ghost town, national monument, national park, restored fort, every place we visited graced that first rack, and I guess the collecting of spoons transfused our blood. Ronnie's more than mine. Over the years, he selected and purchased 8 more spoon racks, with capacities varying from 12 to 48, and displayed them on our living room walls. Everywhere we went, we searched for the perfect spoon to perpetuate that specific spot in our minds. The one rule was, never display any spoon unless we had visited the place. A rule set aside when Jessie, our granddaughter, brought us three from her European trip. Still, those spoons hung separately on a row segregated from the one saluting our incredible times together. During the summer of 2002, Ron and I talked a lot about our spoons as we wandered from place to place across the Midwest, from Mall of the Americas to Glacier National Park, and at every stop, we bought another one, 21 in all the most we had ever collected in 1 year. We relived in our conversations those times past, already memorialized by spoons on the racks at home. We returned home in November to place our new spoons on those racks and visualize the ones to come next year. Reservations were made at 2 Australian national parks. There would be spoons from there. The casino in Melbourne, where we would spend our anniversary night, would offer a special spoon. Jessie told the innkeeper at the Tasmania Bed and Breakfast of our hobby, and he promised to have one ready. And she even convinced the horse ranch where she worked to have something to add to our collection. About 5:30 in the afternoon of January 6, 2003, Ron and I walked our dog. We'd had a busy day, me packing for Australia and Ron running errands for the office. Ron was more tired than usual, yet we both laughed when he said, "Those girls at the office don't know I'm retired, or they just don't care." About halfway into our mile and a half loop walk, he became lightheaded and sat down to rest a minute. I told him I would drive over to pick him up after I finished the walk, and Nikki and I continued down the trail. From about 250 yards, I saw he had crossed the creek and was walking towards the locked car. Why, I thought, I had the keys. Why didn't he wait for me? When I looked over again, he was lying on the ground. I raced toward him, thinking he must have tripped or perhaps he was dizzy, lost his balance, and may have hurt a knee, an ankle. A couple reached him first. He was lucid, not in any pain. I asked him and he said, "No, just very weak and lightheaded." I backed the car up and the couple helped him in. He thanked them and was dead less than a full minute later. He never struggled, gasped for breath, or expressed any indication of pain. He simply stopped breathing. He was pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital. Based on what happened, doctors speculated electrical imbalance, cardiovascular disease, a stroke, and in the end, the death certificate listed heart attack. No one asked to perform an autopsy. Didn't seem necessary. Certainly, it didn't to me. He was gone, and the why or how didn't matter. I signed to donate his organs, as we had agreed long ago, and knew he would be pleased to know someone would see with his corneas, maybe the only usable donation. I was lost in a fog of disbelief, as were our kids, grandkids, and all the people who loved him. Ronnie and I enjoyed the being together of being married, and I could not get my mind around the thought of not having Ronnie next to me. Once, just a few months before, in Deadwood, South Dakota, Ron and I became separated in one of the casinos. Thinking I left the building, he went down the street, and when I realized he was gone, I panicked, consumed by an unreasonable fear of losing him. As I dashed from building to building in search of him, he searched for me. When we saw each other, I burst into tears, and though I felt foolish, I couldn't stop the tears of relief. He understood and held me for a minute. Maybe that was a precursor of things to come. The same horror and terror multiplied 1,000, 1,000,000 times, devoured my spirit that Monday afternoon. That grew to a massive hole in my heart 5 days later, Saturday morning, the day of the memorial service. Our kids, my brother John, who was to do the eulogy, my niece Peggy, my sister-in-law Becky, and a couple of friends arrived early that morning for coffee and to prepare for our formal goodbyes. While the others sat in the living room, John and I sat at the kitchen table talking, reminiscing about how Ronnie had added so much to both of our lives. John made notes as he put together his farewell tribute. The sound of something hitting the floor in the living room pierced the heavy air that surrounded us. A spoon had fallen from the top rack. In the 25-plus years those racks hung on that wall, never had a spoon fallen. Most of them could only be removed when turned at a certain angle. Peg called out, "Aunt Olivia, a spoon fell." Chill bumps covered my arms as I reached to pick up the fallen spoon from Tombstone, Arizona, a place we had visited so long ago. Without a voice, Ronnie spoke to me, and I heard him as clearly as if he sat across the room. "Anne, I've crossed. the tombstone of my life has been set. You will go on, and we will travel together. Becky said, look, the spoon, next to the one that fell, is moving. Indeed, it was swinging back and forth, and I got a chair to climb up to look. Australia? How could that be? We were never in Australia. Australia was just a place we planned to visit together. I don't know the source of that Australia spoon, and it doesn't matter how it found a place in our spoon collection. Ronnie spoke to me, to us, that morning. He let me know I was not alone, that he would stand beside me even as I stood at his tombstone, and that he would continue to travel with me. I experienced a peace unknown that week, and that peace remains with me. It got me through that day and every day since. There have been dozens of other reminders of Ronnie's continued presence in my life, but none clearer or more opportune than the falling of the spoon. Next story. My ex-husband wound up being a really angry, hateful, mentally ill man towards the end of his life. Even after 5 years and several girlfriends, one of them serious, he never got over me leaving him. He always felt that I was his wife, his property to the end. He would vacillate between trying to destroy me emotionally and trying to bring me back into his life. He would forget all the resentment as soon as a real problem would occur. A problem with his computer, one of his animals, when he had his first heart attack or subsequent chest pains, and the heart attack that killed him. He was on the phone calling me, completely forgetting the animosity. For the sake of the kids, I did the best that I could to get along, except that he was unexplainable. He died on his living room floor with my older child in attendance. He left the hospital after going in for severe chest pains. He insisted to the nurses that he was fine and stubbornly signed himself out. Within 2 hours, he was dead at the age of 47. 2 days after he died, I went to his house alone to retrieve any paperwork and photos that belonged to me or us jointly that he kept. I wound up spending almost 2 hours before bagging up his clothing and sorting through what had been our file cabinet. As I was leaving, I was surprised to realize that I had never been bothered by being alone in his house, not by being alone at night, and not by the fact that he had died there. I had found myself being very comfortable and safe. I decided later that somehow I knew his anger had died with him, that I was welcome into his home, welcome to take what was rightfully mine or ours, and that he wanted me to take care of removing his personal items instead of his family members. I went back several times to the kids and also to retrieve other items that were theirs. I never had that same feeling again, but always wondered if he was there watching. A few weeks later, my current husband and I went to the house to get his lawnmower. This made me feel very uncomfortable, as my ex hated my current with a passion. The feeling started long before we entered the house, but became very uncomfortable as my current husband looked at my ex's things. All very explainable with a conscious mind. I hadn't wanted my husband to even enter the house out of respect for my ex's feelings, but didn't say so, as I would have received a look that told me I was being ridiculous. After we had been inside a few minutes, the discomfort was becoming very strong. I wanted nothing more than to shoo my husband out the door and make a hasty retreat. I started feeling like things were falling on me as I picked up common household items like the tuna and SpaghettiOs he kept for the kids. I must have looked pretty silly ducking from the imaginary things attacking me from the top of the cupboards and the refrigerator. After a few minutes of that and my growing discomfort to beyond uncomfortable, the fruit fly started. Not real fruit flies, but again, imaginary ones. If you think of what it's like in the summer to have a fruit fly or gnat buzzing around the very edge of your peripheral vision, you'll know exactly what I was seeing. A black dot, almost touching the side of your head, that you instinctively swing a hand at. Now, instead of ducking from invisible things, I was swatting at them. Trust me, there were no fruit flies. At this point, I decided I had ignored the hint long enough, shoved the husband into the car and headed home, vowing never to bring him there again. I went back to the house at least once after that, but never saw the fruit flies or had any feelings, good or bad, about it while I was there, other than the inspected ones. More than a year later, the house still stood empty, waiting for the bank to foreclose on it. Life had taken on a new normal, and we were preparing for our second Christmas since his death, when I swatted at a fruit fly. Somehow, I just knew that the house had been sold, and he had moved in with us. I drove by the next day, and while the house hadn't been sold, there was a for sale sign up front and a full dumpster. The bank had people come in and remove the remaining items while getting it ready to be sold. I saw the fruit flies regularly for a few weeks, always on my right side, but they never bothered me. I even got up the courage to tell my husband, but not the kids, about it and my theory. He's very open-minded and didn't seem terribly bothered by it either. We even joked about it once or twice, blaming my ex for taking things we couldn't find. I talked to a psychic I know, and she said that she felt that there was more than one, that he had brought family members with him, and that this sometimes happens at holidays. That kind of bothered me. It was one thing to have my ex hanging around, another to have my mother-in-law visiting. One night, a month or so into the occasional sightings, I was in bed alone. The kids were asleep and my husband was working the night shift, when I felt someone sit on the end of the bed. While occasionally seeing fruit flies that weren't there was acceptable, feeding things was not. I told the air in general, "I don't mind you hanging around here and keeping an eye on the kids. However, you are not to make yourself known." That ended it. I didn't see another black dot until the next Christmas, when I saw one once in the kitchen, the most common sight, and his favorite room. It was only when I was cooking, something he always loved. I felt as though he was just saying hi and letting me know he was there.